Episode 180 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 25th, 2018. We'd rather be at Avengers Infinity War. Episode 180. Does that mean that by the end of this episode, we will have completely reversed ourselves?
Yeah.
It's kind of a landmark number.
We're going to change our position on Infinity War. Be like, yeah, it wasn't actually that good. We'd rather be here recording about TV.
Yes, exactly. Even though we haven't seen it yet. We feel like as we talked, we learned. The eventually, the friends we made along the way.
Aw, that's so corny. Get out of our room. Just leave.
Stop that.
We don't want you here now. You ruined it, Randy.
The Avengers were the friends we made along the way, like Hulk and Spider-Man.
Swear to God, if it's 2.5 hours of that, I'm done. I'm done with comics entirely.
Nobody talks about the friendship, Jim.
Oh, man. Oh, my God, if all of Marvel forms Captain Planet.
That's how they defeat him. It's not in the comics. Nobody will see it coming.
That's what Thanos is trying to get the whole time.
Yes. Care Bear stare.
Yes. Yes. The Care Bear stare Thanos down. Spoilers.
Skyrockets in flames.
See, like, it's like the anti-Infinity Gauntlet is what they had to build. It's got the friendship gem and the happiness gem and the compassion gem.
And they already have Don Cheadle.
It's just got Jim. Jim's and like Jim. Right there in the middle with Synergy and the whole band.
And the holograms, yeah.
All right, guys. We weren't here last week.
No.
We missed the episode, and that doesn't happen too often.
Nope.
No, just scheduling. Yeah, it's crazy right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had to drag in just a complete Chidi. Random dude.
You got Chidi, though. That was an awesome interview.
That's a good
Harper.
That's a good random poll.
Yeah.
In fact, we should cancel more episodes to see who you get. the entire cast of The Good Place will show up.
The pressure is on.
But we are the TV Dudes. We're glad to be back here this week. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And I'm Kyle.
We got a almost completely full house. We're missing Ashley.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum.
Yeah, we can make policy changes. And
four people's a quorum?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know what a quorum is.
Quartet quorum? I'm going to go.
Whenever two or more are gathered, is the podcast not?
Quorum sounds like a search engine from the 90s.
It probably was. It was AOL's attempt at porn.
It beat out Webcrawler and Lycos. Yeah, quorum.
You only got search results if enough people were online. If it was just you and three other people, it was an argument that never got settled. What time does that movie start? I don't fucking know.
This week, guys, we are talking about Lost in Space over on Netflix, as well as the return of Series of Unfortunate Events. Then over on HBO, we're going to discuss Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas and the return of Westworld.
Yeah. You guys are going to be getting Westworld every week from now on, I think.
Awesome. 10 weeks, 10 episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
I need it.
And the entire season's only going to cover 10 minutes. Just in different dissected chunks every episode.
Take that, 24.
But before we get into all of that, guys, iTunes. If you guys want to help us out, you can go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and write a review, which is important, I say, because no matter what you write, I've made a promise that I would read it on this episode.
We're about to see that.
And sometimes that fucks me over.
Especially when you do another podcast, people are making private jokes over from it.
People are making private jokes about my beer podcast that I do called The Beerists. And this one comes to us from M. Leet Ninja. The title says, "This show is so good, but Grant..." ... Shaking my head. And the write-up says, "This show is on point and never afraid to speak their mind about any show they watch. From the well-known to the possibly unknown, these guys are willing to give it a shot. However, let's talk about the monster known only as baby-punching Aboriginal Slayer Grant Davis."
Fuck.
"That the slayer of life with either his hands or terrible puns must be stopped before he turns his sights on this land. Check out The Beerists for the true story of this beast. Please stop, Grant, 2019.
I'll admit, when I first read that, I read it as Aboriginal Slaver.
Different.
V,
very different.
And it really, I still hated you.
Yeah, it would be terrible.
It was really bad either way. It was just a different bad.
There are running jokes on The Beerist made at my expense.
Uh-huh.
They aren't made by me.
No.
They're made at my expense.
So basically, it's just is this kind of like the if you got the gas joke where you just kind of want to strangle somebody?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's cool. Thank you for the review.
But we got 5 stars.
We got 5 stars.
And I mean, whoever did it is clearly a hacker. I mean, I know this from...
you speak leaked?
Truth be told, everything that I've learned about hacking, I have learned from ABC procedurals.
Yes, yeah.
And an occasional CBS show.
Scorpion.
So, as I understand it, the kids now are substituting numbers for letters.
Yes.
Holy shit,
and shortening the words.
Yeah.
So that I believe that stands for LEET. It means elite ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wouldn't piss that guy off, Grant. Yeah.
Pretty hip of you there, Les.
Yeah.
Less this is why people tune in.
From 1999, Les.
Join us for our Patreon. Les explains memes.
It's great. Meme-splaining.
Another way you guys can help us out is go to patreon.com/TVDudes. There you can make a per-episode pledge. Give us a dollar or two an episode, you know.
Or 100, whatever you
want
to do.
You can be big ball it if you want. Yeah. Right. No problem there.
Dollar.
Give us a dollar. And if we don't post an episode like we did in last week, no charge. And we only charge for our main episodes. We also do additional content, like Les has been recording all these interviews. No charge on those. So Les is just not making any money off of that.
Just doing them for the fun of it.
The kindness of his heart.
In his defense, the celebrities aren't making money either off that, except for just selling their shows.
No, I thought Les was paying them all $1,000 every interview. Is that not...
How were we supposed to do it, Kyle?
They don't do it for
dirty
free.
Dealings,
man. We had a meeting about this. You could have spoken up. I'm out. Like,
it's a very expensive hobby. You found.
It really is.
It's like, no, honey. It's just podcasting. I'm just not going to cost me shit.
They'll reimburse me.
And as always, guys, we want to remind you that we are proud members of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
Or are we?
Bum, bum, bum.
You guys need to stop it with the soundboard that you have over there. But we are actually changing our network name. We're doing a little bit of a rebrand, and we're moving over to the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater. I don't like that. Electric Sweater.
Hopefully, I'm not jumping the gun on announcing that.
We need to rebrand. We need to. If we're gonna rebrand, we need a tagline.
All right.
All right, let's workshop it. Right. Kyle, what you got?
All right, so Grant, start us off. Say,
yeah, what's...
We are proud members now of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater.
I kind of like it.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, it's got a little Aziz Ansari.
Yeah, I like a little singing.
Yeah, that's nice. All right, but you don't go with the first. That's our start. That's our first pitch.
Grant, you don't go with the first. You go with Brandy's.
Let's hear Les. Let's hear Les's.
Les.
Electric Sweater!
You know, we tried to soundproof this room. But that didn't work.
I think something with an echo, though, would be perfect.
That's actually
studio.
True. Yeah, can we throw in like a soundboard, like an explosion at the end?
Let me hit my wah-wah pedal.
Yes, exactly. All right, one more.
All right. We're proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater. That's kind of Kyle's, actually.
That was kind of Kyle's, yeah. But you know,
that kind of sounded admit, like a little like sweet from the... I was just doing Reading Rainbow, I think.
Oh, I like that.
Electric Sweater. Yeah, I think that's what
we
do, right?
Or I think that's great.
What if we harmonize and we each take a part?
All right. Well, you guys have your notes now. You ready?
It's not going to happen.
We are proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater.
Interesting. Interesting. I think we have a project to go forward with next week. Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's move on to some television news. Randy, kick us off.
All right. So you guys might have heard about how Apu is not okay.
Yeah.
So, and the Simpsons...
big documentary that just came out.
Yes, the problem with Apu. And that the Simpsons addressed it in the most ham-fisted way possible, in which they were like, I just don't know. And then they had Lisa Simpson, the most progressive character on
what
the show,
can you do?
Say, I guess there's no solution. Well, that did not go over so great with everybody.
Especially they had Lisa, of all people,
yeah.
Do it.
So Hank Azaria was appearing on Stephen Colbert, and he was asked to chime in, and he did. And he basically said that you know, he said, my eyes have been open. I think we should listen to the people from South Asian people, Indian people in this country. He says, I never wanted to be people be punished by this. You know, I wanted this to be something fun. It would bring joy. And he's like, I'm perfectly willing to step aside or help transition into something new, which – by the way, is pretty important because Hank Azaria is the guy who could you know, the people running The Simpsons could say, well, we don't want to cause Hank Azaria any work. And if he's saying, I'm okay with it, that leaves them one less shield behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, what I find interesting about the character of Apu is when the character was created, I mean, Hank Azaria was doing multiple characters.
Sure.
And I don't feel like it was until after they made this character that it really became kind of a cultural phenomenon like many of the other characters on the show.
Right.
I feel like that's the point where you go, oh, this thing we've, you know, put together, this isn't just a little bit character in the background.
Yeah.
This is something more. And that's when you address it. And,
well, it's,
it's really disappointing to see how they...
It's a major character. And the thing is, I loved Apu. I think there's lots of great character work. But yeah, it's a thing where you look at it. Things have, the society has changed. Culture has changed. We're becoming more aware of things that we maybe should have always been aware of.
It's a product of its time,
yeah,
and of a small, like, renegade artistic group that was, like, doing multiple voices, like,
yeah,
you said. Like, at the time, everyone was, like, trying to portray it multiple characters,
yeah,
through voice acting. But, you know, also they held to some bad stereotypes of characters, and this is a problem that, you know, now that we're putting a lens on it,
yeah,
is something that they have plenty of time to address and try and course correct.
I think the notion is, I think for them, there's going to be an initial reaction, which is to think that if you apologize, it means you were doing something wrong, and they don't want to admit to themselves or to anyone else they were doing anything wrong. So I think some of this is sort of that defensive thing. If someone calls you a racist, you're going to jump up and say, I'm not racist, and then you're going to make some really awful thing. You're going to say some really awful defensive things about how I have a black friend, I can't be racist, and it's going to make it worse. I feel like we're at that stage, and eventually they will come to that acceptance of, no, we reacted badly, we need to fix this. And also, there's a billion characters in The Simpsons. You can get by without Apu, or you can change Apu, or you can bring in a new East Indian character, and maybe, hey, get an Indian comic or voice actor to voice the character.
Or next season, do an entirely like East Indian episode,
yeah,
where you get tons of East Indian voice actors to do, you know, Simpsons type drama, but
right,
you know, in a different country or
right,
something. I don't know.
Or there's so many, and it's not like Hank Azaria is not losing work. Hank Azaria is still going to be doing tons of other voices on the show.
Whatever you do, don't animate a shrug.
Yeah, which is exactly what they did. You're right.
Like,
yeah,
it took time. They sent that off and had people paid to animate a fuck you kind of apology.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most passive-aggressive amount of work to put into, like, a non-apology.
It was fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
But, I appreciate what he said. I think he had a pretty reflective and conciliatory answer there.
And I appreciate him going on a limb because, you know, presumably he didn't okay that with his producers. You know, I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe this is their attempt at an apology tour. But, well, I mean, for him to sort of risk work by saying, yeah, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the way they did this.
I've heard stories about him as an actor as being, like, really great to work with and super easy, no ego, comes on set, like, what do you need me to do? I've heard good stories about him over his career, which is nice. It doesn't happen all the time anymore.
Right.
But it's awkward because I find him really funny, but I also know him for a lot of goofy accent, immigrant pastiche kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like Birdcage. Wasn't he also the barefoot? Was that Hank Azaria?
Yeah, he was.
That was the barefoot assistant, or
he's done. He does sort of stereotype. He has done that kind of thing.
And
before.
And that's a broad swath of comedy, and he does it really funny. And I don't ever feel like he's personally being mean about it, but it is iffy ground.
It's trickier when you're not, like, he does a character on Mad About You where he was like the goofy dog walker, and that's a caricature of the same way.
And
but
that's straight up based on a friend of his from childhood. He said
he does characters. It makes sense.
Just rewatched the Mad About You.
But when you're straight and you're doing a gay, you know, a gay type character that's a stereotype, or you're a white guy and you're doing an Indian character that's a stereotype, that becomes a little more problematic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good that he's recognizing that.
Yeah.
All right. Amazon has renewed Jack Ryan, which doesn't even premiere until the end of August.
Ugh.
They've renewed it for season two.
You know, you could read this two ways.
Yep.
One is that, like, it is so good that they're just backing their play. Or
yep.
you could read it like what Amazon seems to do all the time. They like this marketing gimmick of renewing something early because they can always just cancel it if it doesn't work out still.
See, I would read it the third way, which is they want to lock down John Krasinski before he gets cast as Mr. Fantastic.
Ah.
Or there's another way to read it. think that Randy said Jack Reacher and then get disgusted.
Is that, Kyle, how you read it?
Oh, maybe. That might be the case.
I saw A Quiet Place, which was Krasinski, you know, pulling his Jordan Peele, and it's great. So I think part of it is probably they wanted to lock Krasinski in before he went. I was like, hey, that's great. I would love to be Jack Ryan, but I've got these six movies to make.
Right.
So I think that's possible too. But yeah, it doesn't really indicate anything. It's just kind of interesting. I am curious to see how that show goes, though.
There's almost nothing I could care about less than a Tom Clancy adaptation than Jack Ryan at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize that if Amazon doesn't make it, it doesn't matter. Within the next 2 years, by law, someone has to make something off of the Jack Ryan property. I saw something the other day. It was like, the next time that you're mad that, you know, there's some other... Taraji P. Henson-led female black action movie or something like that. Think about how you didn't complain about the last Jack Ryan reboot and shut the fuck up. And
so you want to complain about the Jack Ryan reboot?
Yes.
To give you the cover.
So I'm covering all my bases.
So I think I might have found something you care less about. Fast and Furious is getting a Netflix animated series.
I would watch that before I would watch the Jack Ryan.
I am ridiculously excited about this.
This should be really fun, honestly. Oh,
I hope it's done like Speed Racer with the psychedelic colors.
I just hope that the 3D modeling is done as well as Futurama.
Oh my God, it might be like Speed Racer. It's an animated show. It will offer fans a look at Dom Toretto's teenage cousin Tony after he's recruited by the government to fight crime by infiltrating an elite racing league. That is fucking Speed Racer.
It's not going
to
be about that, though. It's going to be about family.
It's always about family, man.
I am ridiculously excited. I love the ridiculous of the Fast and Furious movies. I think taking it to animation on Netflix is going to be – this could be terrible.
I want animated Ludacris so bad.
Oh, we all do.
I want it to be like a kids-centric show where instead of focusing on family, they focus on friendship to the point where they have lines like, this ain't about family. It's about friendship.
Oh, yeah.
I'm completely uninterested in this.
Have you seen the movies?
You have a wrecking of cars in front of you.
I love the movies.
But you don't have interest in the animated series?
No, I don't like the translation to that medium for this franchise.
Oh, man, I'm all about it. I could see some great animation.
I wouldn't want it as a TV series either, though. So,
you know, if I heard they were making a Fast and the Furious anime, like, I'd get really excited.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But, I'm kind of in the same boat with you. Like, this.
If they made it a puppet show, I might check it out.
Oh, shit. Jerry Anderson's with real cars. Fast and the Furious, like Joe 90, this shit out. Like, Thunderbirds or Go. Yeah, I would watch that.
Right?
Look, that could be good.
Super Marionation.
I'm not saying that wouldn't be better, because obviously that would be better. But I'm kind of excited about the Netflix. And anime would be better, too. Like, we're going to get the least version of the animated series. But I kind of love the idea of them doing Speed Racer, but with Fast and the Furious. We shall see.
Yeah.
All right. Bruce Campbell has confirmed he's officially retired as Ash. This was all over my Facebook page. People were very upset that they canceled the
show that a lot of people weren't watching.
It got three seasons, guys. Three seasons.
I saw a weird amount of hate against Stand Against Evil as well, which is also canceled. So I'm pretty sure not been renewed.
And has nothing to do with
that.
And
has nothing to do with this. What was great, though, is that I saw a bunch of Stand Against Evil podcast fan pages that just retweeted the hate tweets. I was like, yes.
Yeah. Hey, people are hating you. They're talking about you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that Bruce Campbell has said he's retiring the character, basically. He's like, I'm done. I'm not going to play Ash anymore. I think that's a signal to the fans that he wants you to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
He's telling you to get a life.
Or he's being dramatic. Right? I'm just done playing this. If someone showed him money, he'd be like, I'm back, baby.
Yeah, he'd write a book about the bags of money that showed him the doorstep and how suddenly he was back at S-Mart. Yeah.
All hail the king.
And we'd all be like, fuck yeah.
I don't know. Apparently there's a big fan push for Netflix to rescue the show or something. And I'm like, guys, no, rescue terriers.
I think Scott Weinberg. somebody on Twitter had pointed out that you guys are super mad about the ending of three seasons of a show that in any justifiable world previous in our lives, you'd have got
six
episode.
Yeah.
one made for TV movie, not picked up.
Yep.
I can't believe we got three movies and three seasons out of this shit.
Yeah, we're so spoiled. They're still griping about Community not getting a seventh season. You know.
No,
the actors didn't
want movie
that,
or whatever.
That one only needs a movie.
Yeah, just
and that's just to complete that one line Abed throws out.
I actually thought that last season on Yahoo wasn't that bad.
It was pretty good. It had its moments.
It was kind of a return to form.
I was rewatching
the new characters.
It's all on Hulu now.
Mm-hmm.
So I was rewatching it the other day and remembering how much I like Community. But yeah, I'd be down for a community movie. I'm just saying, people can hold on to things for too long. Netflix has confirmed that Carrie Elwes and Jake Busey are joining the cast of Stranger Things for season 3, continuing the trend of 90s and 80s people. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
I love it too.
I love it. I love Jake Busey.
Elwes is playing the mayor. He's playing Mayor Klein, and Busey is playing a character known as Bruce.
Teeth. His name.
His name is Teeth.
It's gotta be Teeth.
Man, who knew Gary Busey's teeth are like the strongest gene in his whole.
No. Yeah, yeah.
Pass that shit on.
Now, here's the question: why not bring in Gary Busey as long as you bring in Jake just for something? Have him play a creature from the.
I assume it's an underwriting issue that like insurance won't let you have both of them on a set.
That's
you remember that
havoc.
Show, the like I'm with Busey?
Yes.
Where they just stuck that kid, like the documentary kid with the camera, just went and hung out with Gary Busey.
Yep.
For
that guy knew what he was getting into.
Man, it's off the rails because Busey doesn't have a driver's license, but he does. Like he ends up basically chauffeuring Busey from crazy to crazy.
Yeah,
wow. It's I did not see this.
That's one of the better things about Entourage was when they brought in Gary Busey and he played crazy. All right, this is just here for Les. Les, you want to pour one out for Hulu's The Path, which has been canceled every 3 seasons.
All right, I loved The Path. I thought it was a cool series that built just got weirder and weirder and weirder, and I'm behind on season 3, and apparently I should have been watching it week to week and screaming about it because it's dead now.
But as of today, Handmaid's Tale is back on.
That's true.
So we can be depressed by that show.
Oh yeah.
So here's the question: with The Path going 3 seasons and Ash versus Evil Dead going 3 seasons, they can only save one. Maybe Netflix will pick up The Path.
Can we just have them save neither of them?
Maybe they'll just uncancel The Killing again.
Can you imagine? Like, the one thing Netflix needs is just another show.
Yeah.
Poor Netflix.
I know. There's nothing to watch.
What I'm seeing here is lacking 2 seasons from Terriers.
I agree.
How? I mean, if everything by Netflix law by television law now gets three seasons no matter what.
Where's our season 2 and 3 of Middleman, too?
Mm-hmm.
Hell, give me season 2 and like 3 Lights Out. There's lots of shows that need seasons 2 and 3.
Oh, God. Lights Out didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't need season 2.
That's ridiculous.
That was actually a good ending. Anyway, all right, one last story. And this is a story that's been going around.
It's a weird one.
This has been building for years now.
Les said this first on Facebook, and I totally agree with him. It's like there's no reason that a story that's titled Smallville Star Allison Mack Arrested in Connection to Sex Cult Case, that shouldn't make me sad, but it just does.
Yeah. So
Allison Mack was part of a sex cult.
Allison Mack, who was that annoying character from Smallville,
Chloe,
that I didn't like.
That was their Willow. She was a good character.
Their audience in, but no, she was not from the comics, and you either liked Allison Mack or you hated her.
I liked her.
I did not like her, and I always suspected that she would go on to worse things.
I never would have imagined this. She was the female recruiter of other women into a sex cult where they were branded and owned by men. It is fucked up as you think it is.
Not only that, she was like married to the woman who played Chief Tyrell's wife, Callie, on Battlestar Galactica for some kind of legal thing to bring her into the cult. She apparently brought in a couple other members. Kristen Crook from Smallville was a member briefly.
She straight ruined a fuckload of people's lives.
Yeah. I have a tweet here from Grant in 2008. It says, I hate this character, Chloe. I'm sure that in probably about like 10 years, she's going to be arrested for being part of a sex cult. Sad. That's weird.
Yeah, I wrote that.
You were so prescient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
A little back in the day buffet.
I knew about that. Did not know about Trump.
You didn't see that one coming.
One thing I could warn people about is Allison Mack. Yeah. That call on my part.
Bye.
right, guys, we're going to talk about some TV. Our discussion is first going to go with Lost in Space, Series of Unfortunate Events, then White Snacks, Problem Areas, and finally, Westworld.
There will be spoilers.
Yes, there's going to be spoilers on everything, so if you need to jump around, we get it.
Just like House of Pain.
Yeah, just like House of Pain.
You can jump up, jump up, and then get down.
Lost in Space is now rebooted over on Netflix, and it's taking and adapting a lot of the favorite little gimmicks and stuff from the show from, what was that, the 60s?
Yeah, it was the 60s.
I never watched the original Lost in Space.
Me neither, but I
am aware of it, obviously, but...
I gather from my friends it was more comedic than anything else.
It just seemed cheeseball.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit more hokey, kind of like when you think of old Star Trek versus current Star Trek. Yeah,
and it's I also didn't dig on Swiss Family Robinson when I was a kid.
Oh, me neither.
You know, what's funny is when I thought of like old Lost in Space, I never really made the Swiss Family Robinson connection.
Yeah.
And then watching this new one, Shannon's like, oh, they're like Swiss Family Robinson.
That's exactly, yeah.
They're named Robinson. The family's
named
Robinson.
The Robinson family in space.
Yeah, that's... but they're not Swiss that we know of.
Boom.
And then there was that 90s movie...
Meet the Robinsons.
That starred...
Yes.
Lost in Space that starred Joey as their security chief.
Oh, yeah. And he had the man in the iron mask get up for like 5 minutes and shot some spiders.
It was a terrible, terrible movie.
Yeah, the evil Iron Man was there.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that movie in the theater. And then when you bought a DVD player, you got like 5 movies, and that was one of them. So everybody who bought a DVD player that year got Lost in Space.
That was the first movie I ever saw in one of those theaters with the stadium seating. Remember when theaters used to all be flat?
Yep.
If you sat in the back, you were just in the back.
Oh, yeah, my first one was Small Soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
Weird that I remember my first stadium seating movie.
So the thing for me is this. What I'm saying is there were two lead-ups to this. There was sort of a campy 60s TV show. There was a thoroughly disappointing 90s action movie. The bar was really low, and I still think they didn't clear it for me.
Well, you guys might have thought we were going to talk about the TV show, but we're actually just going to review that movie.
That's right. So what do you guys think about Matt LeBlanc's take as a swaggering security chief, Don West?
Well, Les, what did you think of the show?
So I actually really enjoyed the show. I stopped watching around 5 or 6 because I felt like it bogged down for me when they introduced the rest of the people who had fallen onto the planet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really wanted it to just be about the family.
Yeah, same.
So the only person I wanted them to find was Don West and
Dr.
Smith.
Posey.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I agree. I thought that was a weird misstep.
I really hate – I mean, I like the son of the not elected, like basically the loser of the colony's election is the one that survives and like down on the planet with them. And I hate his fucking character and I don't give a shit about any of his stupid politic bullshit. Yeah. Like I really don't care about anytime
yeah,
the Robinsons.
So dynamic stuff is
no,
just like.
Eh. Anytime the Robinsons have to put any effort or any screen time into the group's plan, I don't care. And
same.
I want them to let those people fucking die and go off and do their own cool thing.
Did you get to the part where he tried to fuck him over?
No. So I think 5 or 6
is where
I am.
Listening to you, yeah.
So I'm looking, I mean,
you're right there.
There's a lot about the series that I really dug, and I didn't expect really to dig it at all.
Like that pilot was
strong, loved
wasn't
the
it?
Pilot. Yeah. I have a friend that actually thought the pilot was really slow, but the show built for him, and I was like, I thought the pilot was awesome. It had the kind of science nerd realness that I really dug. I mean, I realize that the plot overall, there's a lot of shit that doesn't make any sense.
The getting the magnesium.
But I loved the magnesium thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love the thing. I would have liked about 20 minutes less of getting there. I thought the pilot was so slow, and I thought the show never got any quicker. I thought the pacing was so slow on this.
Yeah, I really dug it. I thought
I really like the survivalist aspect too, about how they're kind of creating these death traps for themselves, and we were watching them, you know, figure out how to get out.
It kept happening, right? And it felt kind of like The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to lean into
Martian science-iness of like teaching these kids to like. For the first time, I was actually stoked about a Swiss Family Robinson setup where I was going to watch these people have to learn to live here.
Yeah,
and honestly, since the previous space version of it never grabbed me, and the Swiss Family Robinson version of it never grabbed me, I was really surprised.
Yeah.
And then they added like all these other people, and I went, it's a survivalist show about people I don't like.
I like the survivalist idea because I love The Martian, but The Martian is about a smart guy making the best of a bad situation. This was about smart people making dumb decisions at every turn, and that's what kept getting them in danger. That drove me crazy.
They did a couple of those, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't feel like everything was like a dumb decision. I thought it was like terrible happenstance, like especially in that first episode, like shit started happening. It's
yeah, I thought
raining,
it was. I felt like it was a pretty good stack up of like, all right, so you solved this, but you still got to solve this, and it only bought you this much time. And like, I felt like their problems were going to chain up. It kind of surprised me when it didn't just continue. Or didn't seem like it was just going to continue to be a show about the stack up of these survivalist problems.
And how they introduced the robot.
I really dug the robot.
I think
MacGuffintron 3000.
I also really thought it was going to. I didn't like the initial design of it when I saw the photos.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool. And I'm like so fascinated looking at the face.
You know what's smart about that design is that they are able to use just really simple blue screen on the front of whoever's wearing this
suit.
Yeah,
it's a person.
to make it look like you can actually see through it, and it changes the whole weight of it. Mm-hmm. It's a super easy trick, but it totally gives this thing more life.
Yeah. I like that it's its physicality of transforming itself. I like the twist of finding out that it has a role in the initial accident.
That was interesting.
All
yeah.
of that. Like, I'm interested where they're going with that. And the casting of Parker Posey was just fucking fantastic.
See, I think I think Parker Posey's great, but I don't think she's given a lot to do. And I felt like she was a little too mustache twirly evil. Like,
she's more like just off.
Six episodes in,
Dr. Smith literally. Is mustache twirly?
I need a better definition.
Here's
of
the problem.
What she's doing and why she's doing it.
Here's the problem with Parker Posey being in this. All right, this show could be so much more, but at the end of the day, it wants to appeal to maybe not a family audience, but an audience that wants to feel family-ish. Like it won't go like Parker Posey isn't like fucking multiple characters,
right.
Which could totally happen. Like if she's supposed to be this manipulative, screws with everybody's head, she's having sex with Mr. and Mrs. Robinson, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's what you kind of expect in something like this, but it never gets there. The danger never gets there.
She is darkly manipulative, but you're right. It doesn't. She is meaner than the show.
No lie. In the last episode, literally there's a scene where she ties Will up and he's like got a gag in his mouth and is like sitting there in the cargo bay, just like this is, you know, the 1960s or whenever that original show came out.
Right.
And it literally is like the twirly mustached villain move.
I think one of the things that bugged me about the show is that it feels like they subverted it every turn they want to subvert. So like the Robinson family, Will Robinson's a genius, but he's got social anxiety. The parents are on the verge of divorce. Don West is a smuggler and there's every single thing is a subversion of the original. And I'm like, at one point did you just decide you were like going to go to Battlestar Galactica? Let's go as dark as possible, but they don't quite commit to the bit.
Yeah.
Like I don't ever feel like anybody's in any real danger. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to do the darker, realistic, you know, there's all the family could come apart. I need to feel like the moments when the family comes together are earned, which I don't. And I feel like the danger is real, which I don't. Like, mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but they should have let the daughter drown in the first episode if they wanted me to take this seriously.
What?
Wow. Yeah. I feel like they got close enough with that.
Well, shows don't have to be that heavy in order to... I don't agree with like that being the template for where modern television has to go.
No,
it has to be that risky in order to be.
But here's the thing: don't put their lives in danger every other episode. Like even towards the end of the season, there are several times where, yeah, but they do it in a way where it's like, I know you're not going to kill off two of the main characters.
There's
right
no
now.
Stakes. That's what I needed was stakes.
I mean, so, I think I can accept a show where my main cast is going to survive, but I'm going to see the peril and I can be intrigued by how they navigate escaping it.
I think they could have killed off more of their redcoats. They got tons of those lying
around.
Yeah,
that's true.
I felt like they got close enough with the daughter's danger in the pilot for a pilot episode. Mm-hmm. I do feel, and I haven't finished out the season, but I do feel like a character like West, you could have brought fully into the family across a season and then killed. And that would have been more than a red shirt, but less than one of the kids. And that would have kept the stakes up because it is a survival show and you are going to have to put them in danger more than you can kill characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need everybody to die. I need someone of consequence to die in a surprising way
for me,
so that I know there's peril so that they might be willing to kill characters.
Or
off.
Make the stakes like something different than we're dying. Like maybe it's,
For the episodes I've seen, the stakes all worked for me. I feel like it took the pressure cooker off of the family dynamic to introduce more people.
I also agree with that. I thought that was a mistake.
Because they subverted so many things, because of very believable tension for me between Widow Parker and young John C. Reilly. It's not that actor's name, Toby something, but
Toby
oh my
Stevens.
God, his Toby Stevens American accent is young John C. Reilly and Widow Parker from
I do Deadwood. Love Molly Parker.
I'm sorry, Widow Garrett from
yeah, Widow Garrett.
From Deadwood.
Yep.
I really bought their marriage issues, and I really bought her control personality versus his military training, and I liked the kids and how she had done something shady to get the family on
that
there
was...
and the whole setup of like I liked a lot of what they've subverted, but it added up to so much that they needed to work out that Dr. Smith and Don West were that's the maximum outsiders that you could add to that dynamic for me.
Well, and you know, you're talking about that story right there. What also made that interesting is how they chose to tell the story in flashback. Mm-hmm. And it made a lot of sense in those first couple episodes. Like, if you're going to do this kind of bottle story where you just have these characters trapped together, oh yeah, it introduced that flashback episode.
Well, they kind of use it to slowly undercut High Road from characters sometimes. So yeah. Like, oh yeah, no, the wife's just great and he's been off the, you know, absentee dad and blah, blah, blah. And like, she's done some shit too.
But by the end of the season, flashbacks are gone like 100%. And I don't know about you guys, but there was the oldest daughter is biracial.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire time you're watching this, you're expecting them to address it in like a piece of dialogue. And when they don't, it seems, oh, maybe this is going to be part of the story, you know? And then in the very last episode, he gives it like he goes, even though she's my stepdaughter, you know, she's more like me every day, something like that. And that's it.
Yeah.
And it's just like this, and I'm not going to spoil the scene, but they do try to build it up as something more. But
if you're
going to
hand wave
flat.
It away with dialogue, you could have done that in the first episode.
First episode,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The longer you let it sit, the more it seems like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like the middle daughter, Penny. I think that she's remarkably funny, and her comic timing is so impressive.
I do like the differences in the kids' personalities and how they snipe, interact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I liked the sisters.
I like both the sisters. I didn't like Will. I thought he was a little stiff. Yeah. And it's tough to find a kid actor that age. I get it.
Well,
and that's such an important character.
Yeah, I'm like,
in general, all
those
kids do great.
The same kid next season. Growth spurt, baby.
Somehow.
My name is William now.
He found a cave on the planet that aged him.
Well, okay. Mixed feelings on that show. Let's jump over.
Or everyone liked it but Randy.
Well, it seems like... You know, you were making some convincing arguments.
Can I make one last comment? I think it'd be really cool. And when you see where they end the season, which is a little predictable, but also kind of different than where everything's going, I think it'd be amazing if they somehow introduced the actual Dr. Smith to this group.
You know the actual Will's in there, right?
From the original?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Who's the original? Who's actual Will?
Molly Parker.
Weirdly, yes. Molly Parker. Yeah, he aged very strangely. No, so when Parker Posey steals the jacket.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's Will.
That's Will that she steals the jacket from.
So Will was playing the real Dr. Smith.
Dang it. I was like, what if you had a Dr.
Sorry
about that. Sorry. I'm just ripping this place apart.
It's almost as bad as Les's weird pop noises he's making.
No, but...
Like this is a Seinfeld riff or something.
Boo-doo-boo-doo.
Sorry to interrupt.
I forget what I was saying.
Series of unfortunate events.
Yep.
Randy's watching this show.
Yep.
I don't think anyone else is watching this show. But
I'm watching.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I think we're about at the same spot.
I really like the first season. And I have never read the books and never seen the terrible movie.
Let me ask you a question about the first season and about this. Just Who would you say that this show is for? Would you say it's for like theater fans?
Yes. You know? Yes, for sure.
Okay.
And it's also, it's Barry Sonnenfeld, and he has a very specific aesthetic, and I like that aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Kind of Sweeney Todd-ish.
Yes.
It's Tim Burton's old aesthetic.
Yeah.
And while I like the kids, they actually got really good kid actors, and I love Patrick Warburton as Lemony Snicket making these sort of, you know, asides and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The star of the show, in both name and reality, is Neil Patrick Harris playing Count Olaf.
I thought you were going to say the baby. I love that baby.
Oh, the baby's great.
Yeah.
But Neil Patrick Harris plays a villain who is undeniably evil and wicked, and you don't want him to win, but he's so charming that you can't help but be excited to see him every time he turns up.
Well, and it's funny because I'm watching the show and, you know, somebody walks in and I almost felt the need to like explain to him like, no, this is a show about adults being mean to children. Yeah. Like, don't just give it a second. Like, don't think I'm weird. It's actually kind of fun. But no, it's just like Child Abuse, the TV show.
It's weird. It's weird that it works because it is dark.
Exactly what I was trying to
say. It is weird that it works because it is dark and they're miserable and they move to someplace and it gets more miserable. And there's always some adult there. Like there, mm-hmm. Sarah Rue plays the librarian. And Sarah Rue, by the way, I'd forgotten. I had to look up who she was. But I was like, man, she's great in this as a librarian. And then everyone else around them, whether it's like the obsessed violin playing head of the school or they're all so or the little girl who's like so mean to them. They're surrounded by terrible people who hate them for no reason.
Yeah, that the comedy. And that's where I feel like it's kind of hard for a novice TV watcher to get into this because essentially you have the kids, with the exception of the baby, are normal. You know, they're very smart. They're very likable.
Right.
And every episode or every, you know, story, they come into contact with somebody else who's likable and normal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then everybody else is over the top.
Bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the you're talking about the principal of the school. He just wants to play awful violin for everybody. So he just makes them sit through these
It's a strange gothic world that reminds me, if nothing else, of Tim Burton plus Pushing Daisies. It's that world, but little darker.
Like Wes Anderson light, and like you said, Tim Burton.
I don't see Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson has a sort of a.
It's got that whimsy of Pushing Daisies or Wes Anderson. But it doesn't.
It's everything feels like a fake set.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very designed, symmetrical.
Yeah. It feels very arch, which is why Neil Patrick Harris works so well in there.
On paper, you could not have made a show more directly aimed at me. I love Tim Burton's old aesthetic. I loved Sonnenfeld's Adam Family movies. I love Wes Anderson. Patrick Warburton's spectacular. Yep. I love Neil Patrick Harris. I hate children.
This should be just for you.
It should just be for me. I have yet to make it through. I've seen two episodes. I've seen one episode from each season, and I watched like three of the first season.
Interesting.
I just don't like this show. I like everyone involved. I should like it. And I find myself at the end of each episode going, I don't care about this.
Oh, man. I really like this show. And the only reason I haven't watched more of it is just because it's time pressures. But I also want to say season two does introduce Nathan Fillion playing Lemony Snicket's brother.
Oh, wait. And Les Snicket's?
Jacques Snicket.
Jacques Snicket's.
And it's great. And the two of them, they're on the screen together, but they're never interacting because Lemony Snicket is sort of omniscient narrator, and he's talking about his brother, and clearly something happened where the two of them haven't had any time together, but you get the two of them on screen together, and I don't want more of that. I want Patrick Warburton and Nathan Fillion to do something together.
It was funny, the person who watched that first episode with me, we get through the entire episode, and you know, at the end, Count Olaf, he's revealed, it was you the whole time, and she goes, that's Neil Patrick Harris?
All right. Let's move on to some HBO shows. So there's a brand new show by Wyatt Cenac called Problem Areas. This is produced by John Oliver. So, and this is like another informative docuseries.
The format's
show.
Different, but it's very John Oliver. It's a deep dive into boring topics.
Yeah, and it's deliberately looks like a PBS show.
Man, does it!
Oh, it looks like a
70s PBS. Yeah,
and it's like. I love the aesthetic. Yeah, exactly. I love the styling of this. I love the breakdown of format where, like, you know, he's talking in his little studio about stuff. He'll cut away to people
on
video.
A modest proposal.
Yeah. And then they'll cut to a little cartoon, little infomercial, kind of like when, like, John Oliver will be like, and then this.
Yep. And he cuts to little panels in back. And, like, I definitely, Randy, you said before the show that you felt like you were doing homework. And I definitely can get that. But This worked for me. His format, it felt like something between John Oliver and Bill Nye.
I love the aesthetic. I love Wyatt Cenac. And I like deep dives, like an informative look at, and what he's talking about is important stuff. Like everything here was good, but yeah, it felt kind of dry and I felt like I was listening to homework. Like Wyatt Cenac's sense of humor is bone dry.
I feel like this is very well tailored to a sense of humor in a way that People of Earth was not, though.
I mean, he has a dry humor.
It's
but
too dry for me.
I don't know. I felt like he was hitting these jokes, like the visual punctuation and how that like jives with his sort of dry humor works for me perfectly.
His absolutely stupid fake quote voice is amazing, and I like the little goofy like quotes that they'll throw up. I really enjoyed the format and pacing. For I am happy to have a second deep dive show. Like I the only problem with John Oliver is that the nation needs twice as much John Oliver. And so if Wyatt Cenac can be a black guy John Oliver, he can go some places that I wanted Larry Widmore to keep going.
Yeah. No, I'm glad this show exists.
I'm happy I like the format.
I'm not sure I can keep watching it because it also the subject material he's covering is darker and has less of a possible solution than anything John Oliver covers. Mm-hmm. And I just got depressed watching it.
So over the 10 episodes of the first season, I think it was 10, yeah. He's covering the problems in policing across the nation. He's like doing a lens on different cities as he goes and tackles this episode to episode. Yeah. But he'll also address other issues.
Like other problem plus policing.
Yeah. So he'll do something in the first half where he talks about the problems with chicken bones.
Or human shit.
Or human shit, yeah. And then he'll go into talking about, you know, policing again and in different areas and how people are trying to address it, how it's a very tricky subject. And, you know, there's not just one simple solution to this, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. And, you know, I think how he's able to navigate all of this is pretty fascinating. You know, he does a little bit of side eye, like when people are trying to say their perspective that might undercut what else, like what someone's trying to say, to put his little slant on it.
Man, when he has a community, there's a community organizer that says something great about like the hiring practice in after Philando Castile, like the police changing their hiring practice. And he's like, okay, that guy made a really great point. But if there's one thing I've learned from television, it's that if you want a really great point made by a black guy, you should have a white guy repeat it right afterwards. And he cuts to one of his other guests who says almost the exact same thing. And like the other guest is like a cop from the other side of the argument. And like, that was brilliant, Ryan. Thank you. Or whatever the dude's name is.
I think that's the reason this didn't make me laugh is because it's so real. I couldn't get, like, I can get the dark humor out of things like John Oliver or John Stewart, but this was so real. I was like, oh man, this just makes me sad.
This is a deep dive documentary series where I feel like John Oliver's funnier.
Yeah.
But,
well, I think John Oliver, like, feels this compulsion to make, like, an over the top joke to try and soften the blow of what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I think Wyatt Cenac is not going that like cartoonish to like try and make this more digestible, but I still feel like he is finding the humor in how he can approach it.
Yeah.
I would love to be, I'd love to hear the discussions in the writer's room or when they were originally working this show up, because the decisions about tone had to be almost life or death.
Oh yeah.
I mean like everything from those washed out 70s colors in all the logos to the little round bird or like little Mr. Me kind of
the logo looks like a PBS logo.
Like the problem areas Venn diagram. Like, I really love their show logo. Yeah. The PA makes a Venn diagram. It's fucking
gorgeous.
Slick.
His police encyclopedia is like,
oh man,
like how everything just like visually fits into this theme that he has going for it.
Yeah, I and all of those choices are. That's a very odd line they're walking because, like, you're never going to be able to explain this kind of shit to the whole country.
Yeah, yeah.
So the best you can hope for is to kind of, like, hit a wide swath of folks that you're meaning to talk to. And even then, you're, like, I can't imagine how agonizing some of these decisions were and how arbitrary they probably seemed.
You know what I'm glad that HBO is making these kind of shows. Like, I'm glad this is a show that
surprised that this one doesn't resonate with you.
I think it resonates too much. I think the thing was it was painful to watch. It's
he
like
likes
sitting
it so much he hates it.
It was like no, I like it. It's just it wasn't funny to me. It was just like reading the news on Facebook. It just made me sad.
I didn't watch the Colbert Show for years. Daily Show, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
It pissed me off.
It's too on the nose. It's too real, and it doesn't quite get it. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad they're making it, but I want them to grab Larry Wilmore, as long as they're doing shows like this, and give him an hour to make the show he was trying to make on Comedy Central, because that show needed more time, and it would have been great.
No. That show in particular did not need more time.
The panels needed more time.
No, he did not need to give everyone equal weight in the conversation.
That's kind of what I love about Sinat cutting to panelists on the screen, like having, having asked them questions and then cut to their real answer.
Yeah, he gives as much time as he feels like giving them.
Yeah, and I trust him to lead me through because I'm at a point now where no matter how good it might be for the debate, I'm really sick of equal time and just going to leave it there and teach the controversy.
Yeah, well, I agree.
The debate is just filled with fluff and evasion and
inaccuracies.
And just moving to what your talking points were rather than actually having the discussion.
Yeah.
And so it's everywhere in general news.
Yeah.
That's one thing I did not like about Larry Wilmore's show, and I thought it just became bloat, and it also never really seemed to accomplish anything. It was like you may get a couple sound bites in there, and that was it.
I felt like Wilmore's show had potential that never quite got realized, and I feel like a lot of that was pacing issues. I do feel like you're right. He gave some voices who I wouldn't have given any time to at all.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I'm glad HBO is doing this. I will probably give this another shot. But yeah, I was surprised too because I was expecting to love this. I love Wyatt Cenac. And this kind of thing is right up my alley, but I think it was just too real. On top of everything else that's going on, it was just like a little bit too much.
Well, you love the police, and you don't think they can do anything wrong.
You know how I love the police.
Yeah, it's your favorite band.
Yes, it's my favorite band. And I'm disgusted by how many black men Sting is shooting.
So
let's talk about fast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, sure.
That was
no,
too
no.
dark.
So it's 6-hour orgasms for white women, but Sting just.
To be clear, this is a joke. We're not saying anything about Sting. Sting sues people, right?
I don't know.
It's maybe. Funny that that show was too dark for Randy's humor. Can't handle Wyatt's an act. Jeez, Randy. All right, let's talk about Westworld. It's back for season 2, and it put out a fucking long episode for the first episode back.
How long was that thing?
How long was the recap at the beginning?
That was like an hour and a half, right? That was 30 minutes at the beginning of the episode.
I was so happy for that recap because I loved the first season, but I wish that I had time to watch it all again knowing what I knew.
I had just rewatched the last three from the first season, and so that recap hit, and I was like, I don't need this. This is still going. Oh, shit.
I was glad for the recap. There was a lot of information to load there.
Oh, my God. I'm glad I rewatched. I mean, even the recap couldn't do it. Like, I'm glad I watched those episodes.
But I saw some people griping about this. There was like they thought it was slow, or they liked Westworld season 1, or they didn't love season 2.
In the end of
did
it.
You?
It was so long.
Oh man,
and
I
like,
loved it.
I was wrapped up the whole time. This is one of my favorite shows, and I thought this was a great return.
I remembered why We Water Cooler talked about it all last season.
Yeah.
Well, and definitely by the end of this episode, you get to that point where you guys are at. But there's a little bit of flexing. Like, did we need 5 minutes of the man in black putting his hat on?
Like, yes, we need that.
There was a really cool action scene
one of
with
my
him.
Parts. Okay. But sorry.
Because I feel like there was a lot of that, or like, what's her face showing off her powers in the facility? Now
Maeve.
That she,
oh, Maeve? I love every minute with
Maeve.
You can
put Thandie Newton on screen for as long as humanly possible. I watch everything Maeve does.
Okay.
And I love this character, too.
I agree with you guys. I love all this stuff, too. All right? But I could totally see where if you weren't
they
as big of a fan.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just everybody showing off their outfits. And
that's a reasonable point.
I mean,
but
I thought Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was a half hour of slow motion too long. So I understand.
I think what I like, a lot of stuff that, like, the slow, all the monologues, all the stuff that's like verbal callbacks to stuff from last season, especially all the stuff that they gave, I'm blanking on her name, who's the lead character?
Dolores.
Everything they gave Evan Rachel Wood?
Yeah.
Everything they gave her to do, like I was mesmerized watching her go sort of full robot evil. Mm-hmm. But my favorite thing was absolutely anything Maeve did. Her just delight at the power she was given, but at the same time she's got this existential pain about a daughter who doesn't even exist really.
Well, and that she understands, that Maeve understands that escaping was not her idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That Maeve understands that she was coded to infiltrate the mainland and that this rebellion is not free thought.
Right, yeah.
Like,
so are we supposed to take that Maeve and Dolores are two ends of this, I don't know how to like phrase this, but robot civil rights spectrum that they're trying to have this revolution of like Dolores is the gun and Maeve is the brains.
I don't think so. I think they want different things. I think that I think that what Les said is kind of what it's about is that Maeve was a tool for Dolores' rebellion, but in fact, Maeve has her own agenda.
I think Arnold originally, yeah, and then Ford intended, yeah, to wake Dolores.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true.
Like, they thought Dolores was furthest ahead and found the center of the maze and was one of the first robots. Because in the first season, you'll notice when Logan puts the knife to Dolores for the first time and, yeah, guts her.
Yeah.
It's one of the big time tells of what timeline you're in, because her guts are different than the new robots.
Right.
And her guts are the same as when she's in the station with Arnold when he first presses the skin down on her and wakes her up.
Yeah.
So like, you know, she's that era robot. So, yeah, I feel like they intended Dolores to wake up and didn't intend Maeve to. But in the first season, I honestly thought Maeve woke up first.
Yeah.
Because I thought her giving herself super user powers and making Felix help her and all this, like, I thought all of that was her idea, but someone high res screen grabbed the panel from when she recodes herself or has Felix reboot her and infiltrate the mainland is in her programming.
Yeah.
Arnold or whoever, but her embedded dormant code included the reconnaissance, mm-hmm, so that Dolores' rebellion would eventually work.
Yeah.
Because there has to be some reconnaissance, right? But Dolores is supposed to be the one that wakes. I don't think they ever really intended Maeve to decide.
So you think maybe overrid her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maeve decided to move her cornerstone of her story.
Yeah.
She made her cornerstone a fake thing on knowing it's fake, she decided to make that her cornerstone.
Yeah.
And that is the first true free thought.
Yeah, I think you're right. Also, I'm loving this whole thing with Arnold, Bernard, who he's on the very inside. Like, he is essentially the guy in charge of things right now in a lot of ways, and he knows he's basically a Manchurian candidate.
And nobody but the host at this point is alive that realizes what he is.
Nobody knows.
No one knows.
Well,
humans
he's also man
know.
On fire too, in the sense that,
yeah,
he, you know, he's having to put pus in his neck and other, yeah, stuff to
only
stay
alive. Maeve, I guess, would know.
Yeah.
Then.
So the other hosts recognize him, but.
Yeah, what's funny about that is when I went to go watch this episode, I started it, and I got about 20 minutes in before I realized I was watching episode 9 of the first season. And I was like, they're really like, some of this seems kind of familiar. Like, are they kind of like doing recaps from like a different perspective? I don't really remember.
That's why that recap seems so long.
I feel like I've seen this before. And then I went, oh, shit, I'm totally on the first season. And so I went back, but it was the scene where Maeve is awaking Bernard and,
yeah,
saying, you don't even realize it, but you're one,
yeah,
of us.
Yeah, when she freezes, yeah, his motor functions and goes, it's terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Also, just a small thing, but I love seeing all the modern technology in Westworld. I love the buggies riding around in Westworld. Like, I love that clashing
exposition.
Yeah.
When it opens on the devastation and everything, and you realize you're a couple of weeks later,
yeah,
and you're watching an incursion force come in to secure,
yeah,
the park. And yeah, that juxtaposition of like guys landing on the beach,
yeah,
in full military gear, yeah, from the future, and yeah,
and then it's all an island in the South China Sea or something,
and it ruins the, yeah, like, a, we find out where we don't know where
it's
the park is.
It's not an alien world,
island.
Like, people
it's not
were
an alien world. It's not been shrunk. It's, yeah, an island.
Yeah.
And I love their argument with, no, you will get the fuck off this island.
Yes.
We rent it from China. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I like that too.
That just straight shutdown was great.
By the way, you guys caught the one of the big things in season one that became a thing in season two also was that nobody spends this much money just to give rich people a chance to shoot cowboys.
It's one thing to the people that come to the park. It's another thing to corporate, but it's another thing entirely.
We got that first hint,
yes,
where they said, oh, you're recording people's experiences here?
No, which immediately, we're not having that conversation, Bernard.
Yeah, which immediately goes to, oh, they're fucking blackmailing the rich.
Oh,
they're seeing what they get up to.
Or even more than that. Like,
or their target marketing.
Target marketing or something like that, yeah.
Manipulating.
Yeah.
So, drone hosts.
Yeah, drone hosts.
Boom.
Notable,
that,
yeah.
They can do DNA skipping, and God help you if it decides you aren't who you say you are,
yeah,
or something. Like, you'll be killed by everything in that room.
And there's also replacements.
So creepy.
Replacing people with robots that you control. Like, they can replace key figures.
They've already pulled that trick on us. I mean, they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
So at what point are we going to find out that...
this is better than Dollhouse.
that this park is not to build robots that look like humans. This park is to build a host that we can move a rich person's mind into.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah,
something like that has to at least be one of their revenue streams they intend.
Yeah.
Is to make immortal bodies for people, right?
And that's what I love about this is that we've already seen the possible expansion. Like, we're going to see Samurai World, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah,
we're
they said see... there's six different sectors, or at least.
Yes, there's six parks.
We're going to see the outside world. This is not just about
I saw those clips. You think that could be Future World.
Future World.
Yep. Yeah.
So we're not just going to see Westworld. The name implies what the movie was, which was basically sort of a robots go crazy and kill a bunch of people, and that's it. This is a much bigger scope.
And there's other parks in the movies. There's Medieval World. There's Roman World.
Right.
I mean, there's definitely, if you have Westworld, there's definitely a Caligula world in there somewhere.
But there's a bigger scope to this story, and I think season two we're going to see that crack open.
We find out pretty quickly in season two, we know so far that Arnold, his whole plan for Dolores, we find out by the end of season one, was to have Dolores kill him, right?
Yeah.
Because he's discovered that they've woke up, or he believes that they're close enough,
yeah,
and that we can't open the park.
Yeah.
And so we know that the buried town that Dolores finds when she's seen the robots learning dancing, that's the training town before they open the park.
Right.
Right? So she kills... the Wyatt scenario. She has Teddy help her. They murder every robot in there. And then Arnold's like, yeah, but they could rebuild all the robots. You got to also kill me. And that's when he puts the music on and she shoots him right there in the street.
Right.
And to cover that shit up, they bury that whole town.
Yeah.
Rebuild all the robots, erase Arnold, and move on.
And so he rebuilds that town again just to trigger her.
By what we're seeing by the end of season one is Ford's guilt for realizing that he was wrong, that Arnold was right, that they was right and wrong. They shouldn't have opened the park. The robots can become alive. Arnold thought that they were ready then, and Ford recognized that they needed the park open because the robots can't be alive without being able to study people, and they need the park to do that. So basically... he makes this guilt-ridden devil's bargain where he keeps the park open for this amount of time while he's long-term working towards repaying Arnold, which is getting him – he does by getting himself killed in the exact same manner.
Right.
Because he feels horrible.
Yeah.
And he does it in the same town, which he's uncovered for this final narrative, which is waking the robots up.
Yeah, well, because Arnold – or Ford built the park. I mean, once he knew Ford – everybody thinks that Ford built the park for Delos, for the people to serve the people. And in fact, no, it's built to serve the robots.
Yes. Yes, Delos. And we find out that Delos is the only reason actually that the park was able to go ahead and be opened, because Arnold's gambit would have worked, except they must have already been doing trial runs for initial investors.
Yeah.
And that's the past that we're seeing with Jimmy Simpson through the whole first season.
Speaking of that, I cannot wait for some more Jimmy Simpson this season.
I want to see more of the story structure.
If he's going to be bad this season.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good.
I also, the other small character I want to see more of is Teddy. Because Teddy is having he's having conscience issues.
Well, and she's fully accepted him now. Like it's about you, Teddy. It's always been about us.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't know if I'm good with all this. So I think because Marsters and Teddy was like, he was the hero archetype who was irrelevant. And now we're going to see that sort of hero archetype that's built into him faced with sort of this violent rebellion. And I think he's going to be kind of a thorn for
her. I loved how in season one, he wasn't the hero for the sake of having a hero in the show.
No.
He was a hero for the sake of people who want to kick the hero's ass.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I found that so interesting. This good guy cowboy who's designed just to lose every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how is Dolores going to react when Teddy's free will is against her robot rebellion?
And see, that's what I think is interesting. She won't just want to murder him. She actually has those feelings built into her. And like you said, she talks about how we're together and it's about you. And so it's going to be harder for her to face off with Teddy than it would be for anything else Delos can throw at her.
And so we know that Delos, we know that Jimmy Simpson wanted to radically up his investment in it. Like, like when, you know, when he has his moment of like really finding himself in the park, like, oh no, we're investing in this, our company. And we know that Ford said after Arnold's thing, if I hadn't had basically an angel investor, step up, we wouldn't have opened. We wouldn't have been able to open the park, and obviously that's Delos.
Yeah,
but in that we learned that the park and this whole plan and all the robots and the code, all of that shit existed before Delos threw in a dime.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever Delos has done with it since has been a constant fight about what they can get out of Ford. Like, yeah. I have to wonder if Ford knew the drone host labs were there at all.
Yeah, I think it's possible he didn't.
I mean, I can understand Bernard not knowing, yeah. But I really wonder if Ford knew. Yeah. Or, like, are we going to find shit in there?
But I forgot that Tessa Thompson was in this.
Oh, man.
I didn't know who she was at that point. She's yes. great here.
Yes, yeah. I learned her after coming back and watching this after Thor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a whole other thing.
Yeah. And so I want to say one thing about the Man in Black. I love the way he survived the massacre under the bodies of other people. Mm-hmm. That was such a great moment.
Oh, yeah. So did you guys catch, and we're going to definitely get into spoiler territory. I think we've already
gone. Oh, we're well into spoiler territory.
But did you catch that when he uses the syringe to kind of temporarily revive himself, that – dang it, totally just lost my train of thought.
That he stops the shaking in his hands, but then later his shaking's back, so he's going to have to, like, keep re-upping?
Oh, no, sorry.
Was that Bernard?
There was a little thing on there that said, you know, if you do this – or, like, warning – loss of memory and blackout.
Oh, right. Time slip.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, the time slip, that's not just kind of their narrative technique. Like, we're seeing this from the point of view of Bernard, but Bernard is, like, he's going through system failure right now.
He's losing time.
So we're getting, yep. like, different parts of the story.
Well, and, like, what happens to Maeve when she remembers her kid, as Felix explained in season one, our memories are fuzzy. It's a huge part of how we track when they were.
Yeah,
so that we don't just feel insane all the time when we remember things. But the way the robots work, if they remember something, it's as clear as what's happening right now. And they could slip into their memory like it's hallucination. Hmm. And so, yeah, his time slip could be fucking crazy. It is remarkable that he has not done something twitchy that hasn't made – I'm amazed he made it off the beach, that Bernard made it off the beach without twitching weird.
But here's the thing. That brings us to the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where we see Teddy in the water,
mm-hmm.
and Bernard says, they go, what happened? He goes, I killed them all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think it's very likely that he did do something twitchy and that he did.
We're seeing another big time slip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's for sure a big time slip because that thing with the syringe.
Yeah.
And you got to, like, pause it. I went and, like, read a blog article about it afterwards. But, you see that it says there, like, you know, lapse in memory or whatever. And then they do, like, a black cut screen. Mm-hmm. It's like a little jittery, you know, heads up, you know, robot thing. And now he's on the beach. And it looks like no time has passed. But obviously we're seeing him at two different points.
Yeah. Yeah.
The show is remarkably smart.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has so many layers that different types of viewers can digest it in different ways is just really impressive, and it's very HBO.
Yeah. Hey, can I give a reverse shout-out? Shout-outs when you call someone out for doing something good. The, like, associate editor or some high up at, like, Variety, did you guys see this? Posted this video review about how Westworld isn't catching on with people because it's too hard to understand. It's basically this whole thing where this reviewer essentially mapped onto his experience onto everyone that he's like, he doesn't understand Westworld. So to him, he thinks it's all a bunch of nonsense. And I'm like, it's really not that hard if you're paying attention.
No, in fact, I was about to say, like, this remarkably is one of the few shows I don't feel like is trolling me with mysteries. Mm. Like, and that was a huge point of discussion in season one, is this show just layering it on and fucking with us?
Doesn't have answers, right?
I don't feel like it does. Like, I feel like a remarkable amount of stuff has been pretty clearly,
I agree,
put forward in this story.
But how they think this out and how they must have, like... Yeah. Like, do you write it linearly and then you go back and chop it up and then mix and match to bring out, like, stuff in the beginning that you know is going to fuck with the viewer, like, with the timeline?
Yeah, because some of these things add up like chords. I mean, it just times out so beautifully. But when in rewatching a little bit of this, I was noting that really what I love about it is that it's layering multiple good shows. There is an entire show here about half the corporate board trying to steal the park code and what they want to do with it in the outside world. Like, there's a whole show just about the cigarette smoking corporate board member from the first season who eventually comes to a bad end. Like, there's really just one whole show about that I would watch. Like, the corporate espionage of who Delos is and who's running this shit. You could do all that without taking me into the West. Honestly, I would watch a show just about the company that invented these fucking robots. Mm-hmm. Separately, you've got
Just the labs rebuilding.
Just
the,
yeah, just and their stuff, like the fact that Felix feels fucking scared of and the other guy feel like scared of the other techs. Like we're lowly shits that are lucky to work here. And and so like the weird dynamic of like the competing we're the smartest brains on the planet ego teams, like that's a cool story. Shannon Woodward's character.
Right.
And then you've got the actual fucking Old West, like like and that stuff almost feels like a MacGuffin now, like trying to watch Ed Harris's story, like who gives a shit? It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like I don't care about any of your fake fucking storylines.
Until like, you suddenly do, because this is a video gamer who's built up enough experience that he suddenly is a
call
threat
in,
to be recognized in this world.
Well, and he loves that now he can die.
Yeah, it's like the sick fucking smile on his face in the season finale of season one when they come out of the trees.
It's like, I've been training for this my whole life.
Oh, my God. When it wings him, he's overjoyed.
It's the it's like the crazy video gamers who want to play the thing on the hardest mode possible. That's what it is. He's found another mode to play this in.
Yeah.
Yeah. The everybody's different goals. Like, everybody's wanted to wreck the – well, you had several characters that wanted to wreck the park in season one and break it for different reasons. Like, like Arnold wanted to break it out of, like, a sense of wanting to free these robots. And Ford wanted to break it out of a sense of guilt towards Arnold. And then you've got the Man in Black who I'm not quite sure why – but
he's just always known there's like
this is fake as fuck.
Yeah.
And
but I can't quit because I feel like I can trigger a deeper level.
This is almost real. He's it's like he's chasing when it was real for him.
Yeah.
It's just also I love a show like this that has this broader mythology that it keeps kind of veiled until like the end of the first season. Then it just kind of opens up and it's like, oh, it's not just Westworld. There's six other parks here that we're going to get bits and pieces of as well. And like how do we have such an insular story to Robert Ford and his relationship to this one park when he's also the mastermind of these other ones? But like, was he ever like delving into those? Like, what's the storyline?
Did they just build the robots and then they gave them to someone else entirely?
Right.
Do the other parks not have reverence? It was Ford not there, and so the other parks are running normally.
They could have released six first seasons of all these different
parks. Oh, yeah. I would watch each one.
Culminate.
And the beauty of it is at this point, I already know something that they took all of season one to teach me, which is that none of the Shogun stories matter. None of the Roman stories will matter. Like, the West doesn't matter. The the relationship between the hosts and the guests matter, but the clothes don't.
Yeah.
And so like you could show I would definitely watch an entire fucking season of Shogun World, but I think it's beautiful that like they told me a Western story and gave me just enough clues that at the very end of it when they blew the doors down, I was ready to look at a whole world. Yeah. That they don't have to spend another season explaining to me the other five parks.
Yeah.
I get it.
Let's discuss this every week.
I believe we will.
Yes. So the Westworld dudes.
We're going to take a break and then we're going to answer some listener questions really quickly because we've gone long on this episode. Oh. Be right back. Listener questions once a week. If you guys go to our Facebook page, Randy will put up a post and ask you guys to ask us whatever you want. And we only got a couple questions this week, so luckily we're running long anyway.
Yep.
First question though comes to us from our buddy Ross Brown, who says, "Did any of you guys finish Black Lightning, and will it be covered on the show?"
I have not finished it, but I've been keeping up with it. I think I'm a couple episodes behind. We are going to do what we haven't quite figured out yet, but we're doing sort of a potpourri of shows to close out May, where we're going to talk about stuff we've been watching that maybe didn't quite make our cut, or you know we haven't talked about in a while. So expect it to show up on my list at the end of the end of the month.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit about CW shows in general, but I did watch all of Black Lightning and very much enjoyed it.
Oh, I need to catch the end.
Jonathan Haptemichael says, "Hi, dudes. Westworld's penchant for mystery and non-linear storytelling could lead it to become another Lost. What ridiculous twist or storyline do you want to see in Westworld that would make you go, what the fuck? Like with Lost.
Let's talk more about Westworld.
No, let's talk about Lost.
I almost did this on the previous conversation, but I was like, oh, we got this question coming up.
Yeah, so Grant, as the preeminent Lost expert in the room, name like three what the fuck moments from Lost that you think we should be aiming for here.
Okay, the polar bear in the first episode and the smoke monster.
We already got a tiger in a lake, so.
Yeah, we got that. the flash forward, of course, and the island disappearing.
The island disappearing.
Like
okay.
The first ones I would think of. Yeah, speaking of the donkey wheel and that.
So what if somebody decides that the AI is dangerous and nukes the park? Something like that, like some kind of destruction of the park where we end on a season or something where we think, holy shit, they just wiped everything out, and then we have to see what they did. That would be a what the fuck moment of yours.
Or if HBO convinced us that they were also done with the show,
yes,
too.
Yes, they canceled it.
And then they did it on April Fool's Day or something, like Rick and Morty, like, what? Westworld again? No.
The entire island is actually Bottle City of Kandor style. Everybody who enters the park goes through a shrink ray first. And
I like it.
Yeah, this is not mine. I think this is a standing fan theory.
I like it.
That could have held true, I think, until the start of this season, which we now know that island's owned by China.
It still could be, though, because it could be a mini China.
All right. Logically.
Get a little China cabinet.
Yes. I'll explain to you what's happening in Westworld. It's a children of men situation, all right? In a world where sex robots exist, we're now having problems reproducing. So what they're actually trying to do, unlock the consciousness in these robots so they can actually populate the planet, because we can't have sex with each other anymore. We're just having sex with the sex robots.
Yeah, these all
HBO.
And then there's something with like a penis scanner in like the second to last episode.
So, yeah, they've already made this show.
If our idea is that Robert Ford and Arnold like wanted the robots to take over,
yeah,
is that because they saw something more pure in the robots, or there was something with humanity that this was the next logical leap?
Right. That's the question. Yeah, if they do a reveal that these guys were like, no, humanity's done. We might as well create our own replacements.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious about that. I don't know. I'm not going to theorize on what they should do.
Yeah, this show's so freaking crazy.
It always goes above and beyond what I might come up with anyway. Yeah. Last question comes to us from our buddy Jonathan Huffnagel, who says, welcome back, OTV dudes of ours. This week, I will break from habit with a fairly straightforward question. I assume that you will be covering the return of The Expanse in the next few weeks. So far, Season 3 has hit the ground running and has become my most anticipated release each week. Keeping with the futuristic space theme this episode already has going for it, what shows set around our modern time would be amazing to have a sort of future space spinoff? Not simply Lost in space, rather...
I see what you did there.
Rather, I didn't catch that when I read it, but I got it now.
He says, rather in the way Futurama is like a future timeline of The Simpsons, and if you could choose one character to wake up in the future like Fry, who would you choose and why?
I'm just going to get right out of the way. Terriers 2015, or Terriers 2020, or whatever.
like in 2 years.
That's right. That was the future when I was a kid. 2300. it's Hank waking up and having a partner with RoboBrit.
Really?
No.
You, like, of any show?
No. I'm just getting the jokes out of the way. That's it. It's done. I've said the Terriers thing.
Future cheers. Woody gets himself frozen and wakes up and has to, but the only thing he knows is bar backing, which is a completely not needed skill. So technically, like, he's the manager of this place or, like, whatever the human functionary job is. But the only thing he ever wants to do is, like, bar back for this, like, robot that makes drinks. And, yeah.
Awesome.
How about far, far go in the future, where it's like future Fargo, where they're still out in the middle of the nowhere freezing their asses off, but they got futuristic looking jackets.
That's about
it's the same
and
thing.
And a very small futuristic looking firearm that doesn't look like it could protect anyone.
You guys remember the news radio? I don't know if you watched all this. Les, you probably know. The news radio episode where they did the future?
Yes.
Where they jumped to the future and they did all these kind of space jokes, and it was basically they were running a news station, but it was also a space station. That kind of thing for a sitcom would be great. I'm thinking AP Bio. ABC's AP Bio. You're jumping to the future. Glenn Howerton's character gets locked in a freezer or whatever.
AP Zeno.
Wakes up and has to teach. He has to teach a bunch of alien kids who he doesn't understand.
Yep. AP Zeno.
Yeah.
Or It could be a future version of Wings called X-Wings.
Oh, man, I'd watch the shit out of X-Wings.
Dude, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, where's my soundboard?
Right? I want Golden Girls, but, you know, like, everyone is just living forever, and so they're all, like, four hot young ladies.
Oh, no.
They're, like, they've been alive for, like, thousands of years.
I was
years.
Just imagining, like, the stretch skin face from, like, Doctor Who, but, like, four of those living in an apartment. Oh no, they're just all stacked, like, stacks, like, like filed really close together.
The wacky adventures of them not moving and just bitching at each other.
Every once in a while, they date one of the heads in a jar.
Like, from Futurama.
From Futurama.
I do have one serious one that I would love to see, which is the CW. The obvious future thing is, do the damn Legion of Superheroes. They've been teasing us on Supergirl for long enough. I would love to see the 31st Adventure of Superheroes.
Yep,
I think they could do
capes.
It. Do the same, given the same sensibilities that they got for Legends of Tomorrow.
Unfortunately, this means a Mon-El spinoff show.
So if you guys could take one character and just jump them way ahead into the future, who would you take from what show?
Charlie Day.
Charlie Day?
Charlie Day. You put him in the future.
Oh, God. Like, what? To what benefit would Charlie Day?
Not the future's benefit.
Not the future's benefit, sure. That's for
I
sure.
I feel like they made a movie called Idiocracy, where somehow he would be the smartest person in the future.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
I would take what is her name? Bran of Tarth.
Oh, Bran of Tarth. Yeah.
So I'd bring her to the future, and I'd put her in like a veterans clinic where she like works with people who have PTSD, and everybody thinks she's crazy because she's like, I fought dragons.
See, I think you bring her to that show we didn't watch on Amazon, Good Girls Revolt, and she gives teeth to the Me Too movement.
Oh.
I love the idea of Brienne of Tarth, like a futuristic her. It's just her in modern times.
Yeah.
Realizing Woody from Cheers would just be Idiocracy. Like, he just suddenly would be like the smartest, most moral person on the planet. I wouldn't want... Oh, Kenneth. Kenneth from 30 Rock.
Well, they did that.
They did that, yeah. So, like, take the very end scene of 30 Rock and just give me that show.
300 Rock.
Yes.
All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up there. Thank you once again for checking us out this week, and we will be back next week to talk more shows. I don't think we're going to cancel this time.
No, we're not going to cancel. And if we do, they'll bring us back, just like The Killing.
Yeah. we can't die.
We'll petition Netflix to bring the podcast back.
Until then,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.